Hello, and welcome to a special hour-long education edition of KWBU Rewind, a program that looks back at the week in Central Texas news stories and highlights on Waco NPR 103.3 FM. I'm Jacqueline Davenport. Each Sunday on Rewind, we'll focus on the story shaping the greater Waco community. It's a chance to catch up on the stories or features you may have missed and an opportunity to hear additional coverage of the news items carried during the week. This week on Rewind, we'll look at the 2010 Greater Waco Community Education Summit. The summit, put on by the Greater Waco Community Education Alliance, is in its third year. The vision of former Waco Mayor Virginia Dupuy, the summit has a goal of partnering all aspects of the community with educators, ensuring that people in all stakeholder groups can help make the job of parents and teachers an easier one. Coming up, we'll hear from keynote speakers from the summit in an interview with Baylor University President Ken Starr. But first, we look at two programs at J.H. Hines Elementary School that embodied the goals of the Alliance.
Not for you, but the tin soldier pardoned not to be not for you. Who? Oh, this?
Pretended, very good.
Pretended not to you.
On a typical day after school at J.H. Hines Elementary, you'll find a number of kids spread out in the library, working with volunteers comprised mostly of Baylor students. They're working to help them improve their reading skills. Fifth grade Desiree is with her mentor, Emily Hart, reading The Steadfast Tin Soldier.
So do you think he's going to be discouraged? Or do you think he's still going to try to win her over?
Try to win her over?
I think so. On his after-birthday morning...
Those questions are important. Desiree will be in middle school next year, and J.H. Hines is working with the Greater Waco Education Alliance on this program to ensure that no student leaves in June without being able to read at grade level. Ashley Weaver of the Waco Foundation and the Greater Waco Education Alliance is helping coordinate this program.
What we work on is comprehension and vocabulary, hugely, and then fluency. And so we want to make sure that the kids are reading books that kind of push them and make them on their tippy toes of learning, but as well as they're comprehending it, because we read to comprehend. And so we want to ensure that the children are comprehending, gaining vocabulary words, gaining fluency skills, and all those things like that.
What we expect from you as volunteers, daily expectations, we ask for a commitment of one semester and to come in at the beginning of the hour or mid-hour, between 3 and 5.
And so in August, Ashley worked with volunteers, training them to in turn train the students to become proficient readers.
Twice a week, every time you come in, you work with the same student. That's the model, to provide consistency. You work with the same student.
10 weeks later, they're seeing positive results. That's no surprise. Last year, every student in the program improved 1 to 3 grade levels. In short, in just that small amount of time, even the student with the greatest reading difficulty in the program improved a full grade. Already this year, students are seeing that same sort of improvement. On a day that KWBU visited, J.H. Hines students were reading books in grade levels a bit higher than where they started. As Ashley Weaver told the mentors during training, the books are carefully selected to challenge students in conjunction with their grade level.
And you'll pick that book up based on that range. It's very, very important to pick a book from that range because that's what their instructional level is. We want to get them on their tippy toes of learning, essentially. We want to get them right where it's kind of uncomfortable, but it's still doable for them. So picking out that book is very important. And those third to fifth graders, because they are third to fifth graders, they have to read quite a bit of text, especially those fifth graders in tax. So we want to make sure that we get at least one chapter.
How do you say that part?
Stagger.
What do you say when you add ED onto that? Staggered.
Staggered.
So staggered.
Staggered away and by four.
That's Baylor student Joseph Hawkins working with his student Tavares. This is Joseph's second year volunteering. He saw his student take a huge leap last year, and that experience has him working towards that again with Tavares.
Last year the student I worked with was fifth grader, and he was at a first grade reading level. And we pulled him up to a fifth grade at the end of the year. So I know it's possible. Yeah. Just trying to get him to work on the weekends and stuff like that.
What are the biggest keys that you've seen that can make this a successful experience for him and for you?
I think we've been able to develop a good relationship, a good rapport, just beyond the reading. Talk about all sorts of things. I'm going to go see one of his basketball games soon. He just started playing with playing with this new team. And but as far as reading goes, just trying to focus on the details. And there was a book around here that he wanted to read, and it was the other day, it was 7.5 reading level. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, if you work hard, then you can read that book someday. Mm-hmm. And so it gives him motivation and kind of that willingness to get down and work on it. And I think he wants to do that.
Those relationships that the students and their volunteers are building bring a smile to the face of J.H. Hines principal Archie Hatton. He's seen some community celebrities come out as well, and he says that the partnerships that are being built are meaningful, representing a goal of the Greater Waco Education Alliance that's coming to fruition.
But we've had the mayor to read, the president, star at Baylor University, and his wife to read, and just several other people to come and read, and community members in our churches and our community to get the training and come in and read with students. That mentoring and spending one-on-one with reading is a key to the child's education. We're very pleased with the progress and excited about the commitment and the folk that are coming out to support it.
And so the summit allows us to highlight what we've been doing and highlight what the volunteers have been doing and engaging in students and engaging in making sure the students are academically progressing. But as well, the community gets to see that other ways that they can engage, not just the reading program, but many other multitude of ways that they can engage and use their resources and focus their resources to ensure education and the students are in our community are being educated.
Ashley Weaver will be sharing about improving literacy in this week's summit at the Waco Convention Center starting Wednesday. For KWBU News, I'm Derek Smith.
This is KWBU Rewind. I'm Jacqueline Davenport. The Best Practices Reading Program isn't the only initiative at J.H. Hines that helps students improve by whole grade levels in the span of only a few months. The Success Makers Program is doing just that in math and science as well as reading. KWBU's Derek Smith has more.
Someone at J.H. Hines Elementary School was moving up a grade, and it's not even the end of the year. The sound of bells ringing down the hallway and the sight of administrators marching into a room with flowers and leis around their neck tip off students that something special is about to happen. A student might not be moving up a physical grade. It is only November after all. But while it is only November, someone has seen a year's worth of improvement since the start of the school year.
Okay, somebody has moved up an entire grade level, and that is Roman Rodriguez.
Fifth grader Roman Rodriguez started the year behind in math. But as he's worked through the Success Maker program at J.H. Hines, he's improved by a full grade level. Community volunteers working with students was identified as a key area of need in Waco during the first education summit 2 years ago. And the Success Maker program, says coordinator Lily Ubrey, is an example of a need being filled, with Roman Rodriguez being one of the beneficiaries.
Roman is one of the students who were identified who needs a lot of help in reading. And he's so lucky and blessed because his partner is Mr. Ken Starr, the president of Baylor University, and Mrs. Starr. When he started, he was kind of reluctant. He was like 2 years behind in reading and 1 year behind in math. And I think he had been working with Mr. and Mrs. Starr for about 3 weeks now. And we've noticed significant change in his behavior, in his overall attitude with regards to reading. And that trickles into other subject areas also. Today, we had a celebration about him having a whole year of improvement in math. Reading is also improving, but in math he had made a one-year improvement through the Success Maker program.
The program is one that various schools can use, designed by the makers of the tax test. Students work on projects designed to help them learn at computers at various times throughout the day. But J.H. Hines is taking it further. The volunteers come in and work with the students in the areas they need improvement in after school, in tandem with the after-school reading program put on by the Greater Waco Education Alliance.
Actually, they come in after school. They work for an hour. The volunteers, we actually have 7 to 8 volunteers who are working with 39 students. And they come in from Monday through Thursday, 1 hour each day, and make a commitment to read with that same student until the end of the year. You know, it works side by side with all the other programs, and we celebrate the achievement every little improvement, you know.
Well, what results are you seeing so far? Are you seeing similar results?
Last year at our campus, we didn't have any student who has made a one-year improvement till about close to Christmas vacation. But right now, because we have more volunteers who are working with our children and, you know, all the other incentive programs that we're doing, I think it's all working hand in hand to encourage the kids to do better.
And as you can tell by the fanfare, they celebrate every time a student sees improvement, creating motivation for the students to receive recognition in front of their peers and prizes.
Awesome. Keep going. We'll be back with the noise and the prizes. I want you to know we're very proud of you.
Very proud.
I want you to know
this
while you were out.
Lily Ubrey sees these improvements in black and white on a daily basis. She pores over printouts of data that allow her to see exactly where the students are testing at. Looking at the data regularly affords them the opportunity to see what's working, what isn't, and what needs to be done in advance of the tax test. The data helps their volunteers know where they need to be focusing with their students. It also allows for a targeted experience for each student who's kept in the loop along with their teachers to where they stand.
So see, like this student is working at 98%.
Oh, yeah.
This student's working at 80%. If it has asterisk on it, that means they're meeting their minimum academic performance, which is 80% of mastery.
Well, it looks like on this page about 90% of them are, so
yeah.
That's good.
So what we do, Mr. Ubrey, our Success Maker Lab person, he prints these reports every day. And as the kids come in, he tells them, you're at this level right now and at this percentage. Mm-hmm. So the kids are encouraged to know where they are.
Yeah, so you're kind of keeping them involved. This isn't just a report you're looking at.
Yeah, and then the teachers also are knowing where their kids are.
So far, the results are positive signs for a district that finds itself lagging behind. Waco ISD's numbers don't stack up well with other schools in the state, so programs like these are viewed as vital to helping students who are already behind find a way to catch up to their peers. For KWBU News, I'm Derek Smith.
This is KWBU Rewind. I'm Jacqueline Davenport. Coming up, we'll hear from the keynote speakers in the 2010 Greater Waco Community Education Summit. But first, a conversation with Wendy Gragg. Gragg covers the education beat for the Waco Tribune Herald. I had the chance to visit with her on her reporting in a recent Waco Trib series looking at literacy in Waco schools.
One of the things she reported was that 77% of Waco High kids at Waco High School are reading below grade level, but 80% are passing the state standardized test, which is the tax test. What's happening there?
The way that I asked both the literacy coach at Waco High School and I asked actually everyone I talked to, every expert I talked to for that article, I asked them that exact question, how do those two things reconcile? And they said that essentially, you can learn to pass tax questions without learning how to transfer that skill into real life. Larry Browning at Baylor University, the chair of the Department of Curriculum Instruction in the School of Education, he said you can learn a skill under a specific set of guidelines and master it there. And if you don't make that transfer to just being able to pick up a book and read, then it doesn't necessarily make you a better reader. So in class, there's so much pressure on the teachers to make sure the children learn that skill because they're going to be tested on it in tax. That's just, that's a fact. And you've got to get them to where they can answer it. And so often, the students will be taught to look for it specifically under those guidelines in those circumstances. Like they may be presented with a paragraph in this way and they're taught, well, this is what to look for and these words are what are going to kind of let you know that this is what you should look for. And there's use in that because it gets you it gets you familiar with that skill, but if you don't make the transfer, it doesn't help you in your everyday reading. So that's how, so you learn to take a test really well, but it doesn't help you when you pick up the newspaper and need to read a newspaper article.
Can you give me an example of what a student might do? You say that the students look for patterns, I guess, essentially, in the test. But, like, if a student was to pick up a newspaper and read, what would they tell you?
The example that I was given was, which I found really eye-opening, was that you could hand a student a newspaper and say, read this to me, and they might be able to read an entire article out loud to you. And then you say, okay, what does that mean? What did you just read? And they might say, well, I don't know, because though they can sound the words, they can figure that out, there's no comprehension. And so then you say, well, look at it and tell me what it says. And so then they might look at it and pick out certain words and say, oh, well, there's some puppies in the city council, and then they're going to make a new rule, because they pick words out of there. But I've been told there are four levels of comprehension, and that's not reaching deep enough. You know, that's just hitting that top level, looking for those identifier words. So they could pick it up and read it, but they're not comprehending it, and there's no critical analysis there of what they are reading.
We're talking high school students here. I mean, those statistics, the 70% that were reading, that aren't reading at grade level, and the 80% that are passing the text test, those students are in high school. How can students get so far up in the school system with a below-level reading skills? I mean, in some way, are lower grades responsible for making sure that their students are reading at grade level before they ascend?
Well, and that's a huge question. And I will say that one thing that I learned is I was at a school board meeting, and I heard a Waco middle school principal say that his students this year, and according to an assessment, they did at the beginning of the year, 70% of his 6th, 7th, and 8th graders were reading below a 6th grade level. So middle schools are dealing with the same thing. They have the same task in front of them that high schools do to a large extent, which is getting kids caught up. This particular principal, he said he's made it his goal to do whatever he has to make sure he sends his kids who will probably go on to university high school. He is doing whatever he can to make sure that they are ready to read on a 9th grade level when they go to 9th grade at University High. So then you have to track that question back further and say, well, what about elementary schools? Well, then you look at what the elementary schools are doing. Well, you already have tutoring programs for 5th graders, 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders, and a child learns to read in 1st grade. So you say, well, this child has just learned to read. How can they already be behind? So it's not as easy as pointing your finger down to the elementary school. You have to look back further and say, well, did they come to school ready to learn to read? And although that sounds hokey when you just say it, what do you mean ready to learn to read? But when you talk to experts, they'll explain to you that so much goes on in the brain development of early childhood that predicts, you know, whether a child is going to be successful as they start to learn to read. So I think you really have to look all the way down at before they get to school, what was going on in their lives at 2 and 3 and 4 years old.
Yeah. And this is maybe backtracking a little bit, and you hit on some of these topics too, but what are some of the issues faced by elementary, middle, and high school students, students and educators respectively?
Children start taking TAX tests, the Texas Assessment of Knowledge and Skills tests, in grade 3. And so from grade 3 up, every year you have to make sure they're passing every subject that they're of TAX tests that they're given. So teachers... And everything I say is coming from just talking to teachers and talking to administrators. You know, there's that pressure to make sure their students pass. And but children also have the same pressure because fifth grade and eighth grade are high stakes grades where you need to pass if you plan on moving on to sixth grade or ninth grade. You know, if a child is having trouble passing the tax test, then you know, they have more than one try to take it and pass. You have to figure out how how to get the information to them. How can we help them learn this so that they can move on in their studies? And that's just academics that teachers and students are dealing with. There's so much going on socially with issues. I mean, Waco Independent School District, I believe it was 2008, they had a 82% economically disadvantaged population. That basically means 82% of the children were considered poor. And there's so much that goes along with that that can play into academics. So when I talk about the pressure for the test, and that's just academics, but there's also a lot to consider the schools are dealing with, like, are kids getting enough to eat on the weekend, and are they getting homework help at home, or, you know, is it just mom or just dad in the home, and maybe they're a shift worker, and they, you know, they're doing everything they can, but maybe they don't have time to sit down and give that extra help on math. There's so much that goes into it.
Yeah. In fact, that leads into my next question. In the 2009 TechEx study, found that 25%, one in four children, are living in poverty in McLennan County. What role does poverty play in a child's education or lack thereof?
It's been amazing. Since I have been covering education, I have learned the role that it plays, and if you don't have someone sit down and tell you, you don't realize what a huge role it plays, because it may impact whether a child is getting enough food. Because if you are sitting there hungry at your desk, you can't focus on learning if you haven't had anything to eat. And it may mean that parents are at work, and so they may not be able to be there to help with homework. It may be even more issues than that going on, depending on where they live. You know, are they hearing fights break out outside, you know, on the street, and that keeps them awake? I mean, there's so much that goes into it that I've had teachers tell me, and that ultimately can affect how a child is during the workday. If you have huge issues going on in your life, when you get into class, learning long division may not seem like the most important thing to you. You may just want to put your head down on your desk and go to sleep.
I guess part of that goes into that is in looking at poverty, and is what's called the literacy gap, or some may say the knowledge gap. What is that?
The literacy gap is, I guess you could say, it's the gap in literacy skills that children from poverty have. There are different reasons for this. I talked to Dr. Browning at Baylor University about the literacy gap, and he's the one who said to me, I considered it more of a knowledge gap, and he explained that there is that reasons for the literacy gap include that children who come from low-income families in early childhood, they tend to not hear as many words spoken in a day. And so right there, that's limiting their vocabulary as their brain is developing. And they may not have a parent who has time to read them three books before they go to bed. And or the parent may not have the inclination to do that. Maybe the parent doesn't like to read. Maybe the parent isn't a strong reader. There may not even be books in the house. Maybe no one can afford to have books in the house. There are so many things that can put a child from a low-income family behind where a child from a middle-income family would be when they come to school. And the knowledge gap part comes in because if you are from a middle class family and you're a 4 or 5 year old, you may have gone on vacation to Colorado or even just Oklahoma to see grandparents, or you may have been to the beach. So when you get into your elementary school class and a teacher starts talking to you about how the tide moves in and out, you have a frame of reference because you've been to the beach and you've seen the water move in and out. If you are a child who has no firsthand knowledge of the beach, you haven't been there and seen that, that's not going to make as much sense to you, and the content is not going to be as clear because you have no frame of reference. So that's where the knowledge gap comes in.
In elementary schools in Waco, some are using what's called a response to intervention. What is that?
Response to intervention, as I understand it, as was explained to me by Jennifer Womack, the assistant superintendent of curriculum and instruction at Waco ISD, it's where teachers regularly, informally assess how the kids are doing on certain skills. And as soon as you see that a child, you know, has a hiccup on a certain skill or they're having trouble getting it, you pay attention to that and you say, okay, why aren't they getting this skill? And how can I teach it to them differently? And it's an instant thing, so that you can kind of correct it quickly and then the child can keep on going. And what's interesting to me is that response to intervention, I believe, is something that's also being used at Waco High School for more than just reading. So if you are teaching a math skill and you have a student who can't get that skill down and is just really having trouble with it, I believe they have it set up at Waco High School that you can send that student then to another teacher who may have a different way to explain it. Then that child might say, oh, I get it now. And then they can keep moving forward with those skills since they all build on each other. But it's a way to really stay on top of how the kids are doing and take care of wherever there's a misunderstanding or they're not quite getting it right away so they can keep going in their learning.
This is KWBU Rewind on 103.3 FM, Waco NPR. I'm Jacqueline Davenport. Later in this special education edition of the program, we'll hear a conversation with Baylor University President Ken Starr, interviewed by two of the keynote speakers from this year's summit, Rick Stevens and Elaine Scott of Birth to Work, an organization that looks to build community alliances to educate children to be ready for the workforce. Stevens spoke about the importance of looking beyond the school walls when thinking about improving the state of education. KWBU's Derek Smith has more.
You know, my proposal and my thoughts for you to think about is, you know, a lot of people express disappointment with the K-12 system. Waco is no different than any other community around the U.S., and we spent $650 billion in U.S. public education last year. That's up from where it was not too many years ago, $500 billion. Fixing schools alone is not sufficient. We have to look at the broader picture, what goes on in the schools, but also what goes on outside the school.
As Executive Vice President for Human Resources at the Boeing Company, Rick Stevens is keenly interested in tomorrow's workforce. And on a broader level, he's not encouraged by what he sees in today's education. He partnered with today's speaker at the summit, Elaine Scott, to form the Birth to Work organization, focusing on how communities can better equip children for the workforce. In his keynote speech, he urged people not to look at what they readily see, but rather what they don't.
I would submit, as we think about education and we think about developing our youth, we need to think about what we may not see. It's a really important element about how we go forward. And I would contend, as a nation, we've been focusing on what we see, the school system, and not focusing on all the other things going on in the development and the time of the children in our lives. And that's what's so critically important.
To that end, Rick says that Waco is on its way to doing the right thing, with the goals of the Greater Waco Community Education Alliance fitting into what he says needs to happen.
In order to be successful, you got to align all the elements of the organization or community. You got to have a consistent strategy everyone buys into, a structure, how do people relate and get things done. You have to have the systems, how do you measure and track data. Then you have to have the right staff, the right people, that have the right skills, and the right strategy, in terms of, a style in terms of how you lead going forward. That's how you manage organizational change. Education occurs throughout our lives, from the time we're born all the way through till we die. But as we're thinking about kids, we really want to think of what goes on outside the classroom in addition to what goes on in the classroom. And so I think Waco needs to start looking at some measures of success about what goes on outside the classroom, whether it's readiness for kindergarten, whether it's, you know, engagement and numbers of kids that have the mentors. I mean, these are just a couple examples.
Stephen punctuated these points by noting what skills learned outside the classroom mean for his multi-billion dollar employer.
But I would tell you our biggest challenge is not getting people with the technical skills going forward. It's the employability skills. I can't recall ever having an employee being told, time for you to leave the Boeing company for lack of technical skills. We spend $700 million a year training our employees. But we do ask employees to leave if they don't work the employability skills, because these are the things that are critically important for us to be successful. And I'd ask you, where do students learn these? Certainly not in school.
President of the Alliance and former Waco Mayor Virginia Dupuy said she had several takeaways from the address.
Having a kind of vertical integration of our community systems is what it's going to take. But the people who are involved in that have got to see that's what they want to do. And that is going to take time. But as I move about the community, I think everybody here wants the same thing. We've just got to find a way to make sure we're articulating it clearly and pulling more people into the initiative in a way where they feel like they can bring value in a particular place.
For KWBU News, I'm Derek Smith.
You're listening to a special hour-long education edition of KWBU Rewind in conjunction with the 2010 Greater Waco Community Education Summit. I'm Jacqueline Davenport. Continuing with the keynote speeches from this year's summit, we hear from Elaine Scott, who says that a shared language is vital when bringing the community into the conversation of education. KWBU's Derek Smith has more.
The basic key conference objective that we understood was to help every citizen of the Greater Waco Education Alliance to better understand their responsibility to help prepare our young people for school-ready and citizenship. It is preposterous to think that this is the job solely of the school. It is not. The teachers are taught to teach and to deliver information. They're not supposed to be raising our kids.
Elaine Scott, president of Birth to Work, an organization whose goal is igniting community leadership, according to their letterhead, and building the future workforce, complimented yesterday Waco's focus that has remained steady since the summit and the Greater Waco Community Education Alliance began 2 years ago, encouraging them to keep it going while continually bringing new people into the conversation.
People often move from one focus to another and they never get anything done. They look for programs to adopt on a regular basis, they change things, and then they keep relying on the same people. You've got to have a change. You've got to bring new people in, and as you're doing, new stakeholder groups and new leaders.
But to do that effectively, says Scott, there has to be a common language that everyone in the community, from the education executives to even the poorest teen moms, understands.
We have to be able to come up with a way of talking to each other so that when parents are trying to help and you're trying to give messages, that we understand that you're not trying to defend what it is that other people are saying, but rather, you know, you're going to develop this proactive language about what you all need and want. But if the public is to be made aware of anything urgent, it is how important messaging, life messaging, can be shortened, shaped, and crafted all around us. Any message that I put up there has to be applicable, and it has to be free of any kind of dependency on economic status or race or religion or region or anything.
Scott told a few hundred people attending yesterday's morning session that this means defining what success is for early childhood development on up to adulthood, what it means to be ready to learn, and what being a part of children's education entails. She compared it to a football team understanding signals in a huddle, or a movie crew being on the same page.
Hollywood on the set. When you get a bunch of people who are doing a shoot at a, and someone says, you know, they're saying now start, you know, start the film, then everybody knows exactly what they're supposed to do, they know exactly what their job is, and they don't feel any intimidation, they don't feel any lesser or greater value, because every single one of them has something to do mm-hmm. that matters in the terms of the production of the film. And when I talk about shared language and common language, what I'm talking about is a view or a picture that a community has of what their kids are like and what constitutes success beyond what the school dictates is a test score. I want them to have other measures of success that have to do with their performance as a citizen, their capability to innovate as a human being, and their participation in the life of the community.
In the coming weeks, we'll hear from community leaders on this goal of a shared language and visit with Virginia DePuy in a wrap-up session looking ahead from this year's summit. Prior stories from the summit are available online at kwbu.org/news. For KWBU News, I'm Derek Smith.
This is a special hour-long edition of KWBU Rewind on 103.3 FM. I'm Jacqueline Davenport. We conclude our special education program with a long conversation between two voices you heard earlier in the program, Elaine Scott and Rick Stevens. They visit with Baylor University President Ken Starr. Judge Starr talks about building alliances and how universities can be a good partner with the communities that they're in.
Rick and I are here this week to participate in Waco's third annual Greater Waco Education Summit. And we were able to achieve the great prize of being able to talk with the new president, still new. I think you're not quite in that job long enough, less than a year, to say less than that. Ken Starr, the new president of Baylor University, and welcome.
Thank you, Elaine.
We're really glad to have you here. We promise you to ask questions of substance and of great significance, and we're very pleased to say that that's about all we have on our list. Rick, did you want to begin that top level question that was heavy on our mind when we found we had this few minutes to talk with him?
Sure, Ken, and it's great to spend some time with you today. You have certainly a rich history and background, many people know, but you came to Baylor University in a real leadership position. How do you see the role of the university in the community of Waco in this broader role and responsibility, I say, beyond educating students?
Well, the university is an important member of the community, and so the concept of citizenship is promptly triggered. Citizenship carries with it a very heavy moral responsibility, bordering on a fiduciary obligation to care about the welfare of those who are outside the ivied halls or walls of the academy. And so here at Baylor University, Baylor is a wonderful citizen of the community. The division that is rather historic and cultural in so many instances of town versus gown is virtually non-existent here, as symbolized by the fact that on the campus of Baylor University is a magnificent hall called Waco Hall. How fitting and proper, how appropriate. Waco Hall was a gift to the university 80 years ago by the citizenry of Waco and the leadership of the city of Waco as a way of saying thanks. Thank you for not moving to Dallas. So that is a living manifestation of a partnership that is quite deep-seated here, and a sense of a caring community which we try assiduously to develop here and to nurture here on the campus, but then to extend that caring community, and that's not my formulation, it's in our mission statement, of a caring community that loves one another and, yes, forgives one another when we do things that are wrong or give offense, as the case may be. We're also very blessed in that so many of the leaders of Waco are very proud alumni of Baylor University. Our former mayor, Virginia DePuy, who leads a great educational mission here now as a volunteer, is a double Baylor alumna. I could go on, but the point is the ties that bind are very, very deep, and they're treasured.
So as you think about this, sounds like a great partnership between community and university. Sounds like there's also a huge outreach that goes back and forth between the two organizations. With all that's discussed in today's media about education and the challenges it faces, what would you view as probably the one area as you look around now, you've been here a few months, you get some sense, here's one of the great strengths of this that we have, and it may be the partnership, but here's an opportunity for us to maybe go work together, particularly as you think about what other university presidents may face in their community?
I'm not sure about what other university presidents might divine with respect to their own communities. This, of course, is deeply contextual. Mm-hmm. But I think we all recognize that an enormous issue facing the American people is the decline of the quality of education. As higher education seems to continue to do great and magnificent things, producing Nobel laureates, wonderful PhDs, and so forth. Then we can talk about the demographics of higher education, but the point is American higher education continues to do magnificent things and accomplish much for the good of our global society. Much of our educational system, pre-higher education, is lagging terribly by almost every indicator. We know that something is wrong, profoundly wrong. So what can be done? Well, universities can pitch in and help, and certainly whatever may be the case with respect to other universities, the ability to pitch in and help on the part of a university that has a very strong mission of caring about people. It's part of the DNA of Baylor University as a Christian university that we are enjoined to care about the least of these, as Scripture enjoins us. And frequently, the least of these are right here in our own backyard, so to speak, at-risk children and so forth. And so the partnership with the Greater Waco Education Alliance, which again is the inspired vision of our double alumna and the former mayor, who had it on her heart to do something as mayor about the needs of the children of Waco, especially with respect to education, was something that touched my heart and happily the entire university quite without any need for prompting by a servant leader, has really rallied around that call to serve the kids in various ways, the students of elementary schools in particular here in Waco. So I would use that as a powerful illustration of this important partnership that exists here between the community and Waco. Mm-hmm.
So on the day that you came, the first thing that you did was call the mayor and say, what can I do to help? And as an action, when I think about the leadership around the country in different academic circles, I'm not necessarily sure that many of the leaders feel comfortable doing that, and you know, calling up the local educational organizations, for example, and presuming, coming from a position of power, saying, I'm going to come in and just participate, and yet you found a way to participate. I think that's an excellent model for many, many different reasons, and for us, the participation here is that same kind of thing. We're working to model a kind of leadership style that says now the next best thing is for all the community leaders to have that same view of their role. And it's not about how much money they put back in the community as it is about I think we use the phrase, sometimes your face means more than your cash, you know, the fact that you show up. And that's a personal choice. That's a willingness to be engaged, and we salute you for that and for the people.
Well, again,
who
it's
doing
not
that.
It's nothing personal or individualistic about it, because the culture here was a very healthy civic a culture of this kind of engagement. Right. And so during the transition process, it became very clear that the needs of Waco children were profound. And here's the other thing, that Baylor students in particular were rallying around and providing boots on the ground to provide mentoring and the other kinds of related activities of really, again, caring for the at-risk children in particular throughout the Waco school system, but particularly the Waco Independent School District, as is the case with many communities. We have some districts that are very prosperous. Mm-hmm. Our home district right here, in which Baylor University is situated, the Waco Independent School District, faces very severe budget questions. Who doesn't these days? Well, some school districts don't. At least they're not severe. Everyone has issues, to be sure. So the needs were very clear and were already being addressed. And so it was simply a privilege when I arrived to continue and to deepen a relationship that already existed between town and Gown.
The continuity of the presence. The thing that I'm interested in is the existence of an openness among the between the university and this community to salute and or support the kids being involved in their community. Now, I think I understand that that's true at Baylor, that there's a lot of support for the students being involved in the local activities.
Our students, especially our undergraduates, and we are very blessed to have 12,000 undergraduates, so we have a lot of economies of scale and scope. We have a wonderful school of education, and our dean of the school of education has a great heart for the education of at-risk children. He was a mathematics educator himself. That's always a challenge in any school, even very prosperous school districts, the teaching of math and certain demographic characteristics and gender-related issues. And John Engelhardt, our wonderful dean, has a very robust vision, which we're all supporting, which is finding ways of encouraging very talented children coming out of the Waco Independent School District as a model to be trained and skilled teachers and to return there. Don't necessarily go to one of the wealthy suburban districts with all of the advantages that entails, but go back home, go back to where you came and really make a mark in your own neighborhood. It's sort of the Cory Booker of Newark model, a great believer in returning to your own community and truly, as the term is used, it's somewhat hackneyed, but giving back. And so for Cory to play football at Stanford, to be, I believe, a Rhodes Scholar, all those things, and to go into the inner city of Newark and live in the inner city and be part of that community and now to lead that community. That's the kind of servant leader that Baylor believes in. Baylor has a very strong tradition of training public leaders, governors of the state, lieutenant governors of the state, almost countless members of the state legislature, many judges, justices sitting on the Supreme Court, the immediate past Chief Justice. I could go on. The point is, Baylor University has a great tradition of public service, and this service right here in our own backyard is simply one manifestation of a great spirit and soul of how can we help the community.
Because this is a two-way street. This is not just what Baylor comes and does in the community. This is what the community is already receptive to. And in many cases, when people move into a community, I worked in social services for a while, and while I did a truly magnificent job, I felt working with my clientele, I felt like I should have paid them. Mm-hmm. What I did get is that while they walked out with this incredible sense of capability of what they could do, the community that they went out to go work in still saw them as they were, you know, that they in their old role of being welfare recipients, and they said, "You're on welfare, you know. Don't talk to me about mm-hmm. what you want to know. Just go do the job." So I hadn't trained both sides of the equation. What you're telling me is that there's already a significant alliance in place between the university and the community that was in place when you got here.
I think that's a wonderful word to use, or partnership, but certainly a sense of shared vision and shared mission to make the community better, which can, again, sound rather hackneyed. But there's a vibrancy to that, including, as you would expect, in the business community. I was very impressed upon arriving here about how quickly the business community was reaching out to servant leaders at Baylor University. I don't think that's just because of self-interested that obviously students consume, faculty and staff and so forth, or are consumers and the like, and contributing to the economic well-being, but that it is very important to build a very vibrant community in the moral sense of the word.
So if what we do at Birth to Work, we look at how do we work with the community leaders in each of the in we've identified six economic sectors, while there are, I think, that are inclusive of the eight that have been identified here in the community in Waco for their summit. And we work with those leaders to bring them together so that they see this kind of opportunity that you're talking about. You felt an ease as in your role making the call out. If you looked back now and just stood away from the community of Waco and said, what were the things that made it feel that way immediately at the outset? Was it outreach to you? In other words, and now I'm looking at the other side of the equation. I'm talking to business leaders who say, we really want to be involved with our university. We don't know what to go do. What happened as far as that when you walked in, obviously when you did the interview process or whatever you went through, you saw things then. And so help other people see how they could talk to, a large institution.
I think part of it is the culture, not only of Waco and Central Texas, but much of the country is this way. But just a spirit of welcoming hospitality. I love the old vision of welcome wagon, that when the new neighbors move in, we don't do a barn raising these days, or a house building the way that would have been done generations ago, but we can have a representative of the community come up and say, hi, I'm from Welcome Wagon, and here's a nice basket, a potpourri of goodies, and introducing you to the businesses and so forth. On a more substantive level of welcome, we're really glad that you're here. We want to tell you some of the things going on in the community. And I'm not talking about free coupons and the like. I'm really talking about here is what this community is interested in, concerned about.
That was Rick Stevens and Elaine Scott, founders of Birth to Work, in an interview with Judge Ken Starr, president of Baylor University. As the year goes on, Waco NPR will continue to strive to provide coverage of the important educational scene in the Waco area. If you have comments or thoughts on stories we might want to look into, feel free to contact our news director, Derek Smith. His email address is derek@kwbu.org. That's derek@kwbu.org. This has been a special education edition of KWBU Rewind on 103.3 FM, Waco's NPR. I'm Jacqueline Davenport. You can find local news stories and long-form interviews on our website. Each Sunday at 3, we look back at the week in news stories, conversations, and features here in Central Texas. Local news pieces are all archived on our website at kwbu.org. There's also a comment section online where you can give your feedback on this and any programming you hear on 103.3 FM. This has been KWBU Rewind.